Good morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are in the world, and welcome to the bloody awesome movie podcast, the last episode of 2023. My name is Matt Hudson from What I Watch Tonight, and joining me from across the pond is John Burke from burkereviews.com. How are you, sir?
I'm doing quite well, sir. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm doing so well. I couldn't even think of anything witty to say in my introductory ramble about you there. But you are, of course, the statesman to my kingsman. And if I was to have any bearded man fall down my chimney last week, it would have been you, my friend. Merry Christmas to you. I hope you had a lovely festive celebration with your family, my man.
My wife got sick literally on Christmas Eve. So it made for a very quiet Christmas day because she was not feeling well. She tried real hard, but you could just see like she did not feel good. It was a happy holiday. We had some really cool presents for each other and made a non-traditional Christmas, which I'll talk about later on though. But, I hope you've had a good holiday, and you get an extra. You get Boxing Day there in the UK. Yeah. We don't get that here. I hope the punches were thrown well, and no one was no teeth knocked out or anything. But
yeah, no, there's always that temptation to go full Tyson on someone's full Tyson in their prime, but you got to keep it. You can't do that to your nan or anything. You got to keep it on the level. But it's very nice, very nice. Pretty much 3 days of celebrating with family and then friends before that as well. And with my kid as well, she loved it, so I have her now getting all of her presents in. So that was very, very exciting. I love Christmas. We've been speaking about it for the last 4 weeks on this show, probably longer actually. So you guys know how much we enjoy Christmas. So I'm glad you're able to get some goodness out of your holidays, and I hope your wife is now feeling better. I must say that I woke up this morning, and there was a knock on the door, and it's an Amazon delivery driver. Had my name on it, John Burke. Now, I purposely didn't tell you this because I thought I'd save it, but a gift turned up this morning, and inside of it was a Ghostbusters keychain, a PKE meter, and a ghost trap, which lights up. They both light up and interactive. And I was like, I know exactly who this is from. It's from John Burke. So thank you for my Ghostbusters themed toys.
Collectibles. I don't know how the one thing with ordering online because it's impossible to buy something here and ship to you because it's outrageously expensive.
So weird.
So I have to I go to amazon.co.uk and just pretend like I live there, and they do the transfer automatically for the money. But I don't know how big they are. I'm assuming they're really tiny. I hope not, but I was like, I don't know if these are like life-size replicas, or these are like sit on your desk type replicas. So what are they? Are they small?
They are sit on your desk type replicas, but I like that because of that. So I can now put them in my Ghostbusters collection, which can be seen in our latest TikTok reel, which has already dated the show now. But in one of our TikTok reels, you can see a little Ghostbusters things in the corner. So they're going to go on there. Our kid's been playing on them as well. In fact, I've told her that there was ghosts in the slime that she was playing with. So
nice.
Ghostbusters 2 reference right there. But yeah, no, very, very pleased with that, my friend. It was a pleasant surprise to wake up to this morning.
Well, there's one more gift coming because I don't know why it shipped in two different packages. The other gift, I think, is set to be there next week, but I don't know for sure. But it's the gift that keeps on giving, like Boxing Day. So be aware, it
Christmas
shall arrive.
Never ends. And before we move on to our discussion tonight, you got a really, really cool gift. I think you and your wife got it, didn't you, from your daughter, and you sent it to me, an image, and I was like, this is awesome. But I'll let you, spill the beans on that.
Well, my daughter is increasingly talented artist. She's really gotten into both digitally painting but also actually painting. So I sent you the image of what, and I also posted this on my Instagram, but she digitally painted It's a Wonderful Life, my favorite movie of all time, as my wife and I. And the cool thing, she used, I forget the program, it's a really popular iPad program to paint on. But it does like a time lapse video. So like she actually has a video of her like making it, you know, so she's using the original poster as reference, but then she's like painting over and she's using multiple pictures, like one of me, one of my wife, to like actually have it look like us. She had to do all of the lettering by hand. So like the fonts at the bottom to say like, she put Jonathan Birkenfield and Kathy Birkenfield as, the names. And so, just incredible work, detail, and such a thought of love, because it is my favorite movie, partly because I love the relationship at the center of It's a Wonderful Life. I think, you know, I'll Lasso the Moon is one of my favorite quotes. For my wife, who is obsessed with Snoopy, she did 3 hand paintings, though, on actual canvas, of Snoopy and Woodstock type stuff. And those are also incredible. Like, one of them just looks like she bought it. And I'm just like, are we going to get sued? Like, we're not selling it, so we should be fine. But it is like you've kind of nailed the art style, like, spot on. So those handmade gifts put a lot of thought and just surprise. Was not expecting that at all. So it was really, really sweet and really, really well done. So,
sweet.
Awesome Christmas.
Yeah, I saw the picture and I was amazed by it. And my first thought was not how lovely, but I was like, maybe somebody would love to do the movie astrology graphics going forward.
I know. I'm like, hey, you've played your hand too hard, Taylor.
You really have
works to do. So
you really have to. And because the pound to dollar currency isn't great, you'd have to get paid by your father. So there's that to look into. But a wonderful, wonderful poster. It's been a great Christmas for us here on the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. And we do hope everyone listening had a wonderful Christmas if you celebrate. Now, to keep the good times going, hopefully, we will be discussing our main film of the week, our last one of the year. If you're new to the show, hello. We drop non-spoiler reviews on this main discussion of the biggest or most interesting film release of the week, and we give our thoughts and opinions on them. So if you haven't seen it, no spoilers. Tonight, we are reviewing Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom, the final release in the legendary DCEU. Now, one more time, if you haven't seen it, it's been out for a week or so, but we're not going to spoil the film for you on this episode. Now, let's get to the tail of the tape. It's directed by James Wan. He's come back after helming the $1 billion plus Aquaman from 2018. I want to say it's been 5 years now.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And this was written by Wan, David Leslie Johnson McGoldrick, who is trying to win the longest name award. And Jason Momoa wrote this as well. I know he gave story treatment, so I'm assuming that's what they're basing this on. But Momoa has a writing credit for this. And of course, it stars Jason Momoa as Arthur Curry / Aquaman, Patrick Wilson as King Orm, Yahya Abdul-Mateen II as Black Manta, Amber Heard as Mera, Nicole Kidman as Atlanta. That is how you say it, Atlanta. I'm not trying to do an American accent. Randall Park as Dr. Stephen Shin, Temuera Morrison, Tom Curry, Dolph Lundgren as King Nereus, and a plethora of other actors. Some are voice actors who I don't know if I should be mentioning, so I'm not going to, just to keep the fun of them in the film. Now, we don't spoil the episode, but we are going to read the synopsis, and IMDb have given me a screenplay to read. So it says,
yeah, it's ridiculous.
This is a big one. Having failed to defeat Aquaman the first time, Black Manta, still driven by the need to avenge his father's death, will stop at nothing to take Aquaman down once and for all. This time, Black Manta is more formidable than ever before, wielding the power of the mythic Black Trident, which unleashes an ancient and malevolent force. To defeat him, Aquaman will turn to his imprisoned brother Orm, the former king of Atlantis, to forge an unlikely alliance. And together, they must set aside their differences in order to protect their kingdom and save Aquaman's family and the world from irreversible destruction. So a statement there from IMDb really has helped us out in terms of how we review this, because we haven't got to go too far into the synopsis, because there it is. So basically, Black Manta wants to take down Aquaman again. There's your synopsis. Now, the first film was, when it came out, I remember it being fairly well received, I think. I didn't mind it first time. I have rewatched it and I haven't soured on it, but I don't remember it being as fun as I remember it being anywhere near as. But it made over $1 billion and it was the DCEU's biggest hit. I don't know if it still is or not, but it certainly was their biggest hit financially. So, of course, they were going to do a follow-up. Didn't think it would take 5 years, and they would not have thought it would be their final outing in this current iteration. But how did this one fare then critically and with the fans? John, the critics on Rotten Tomatoes currently have this at 35% with their score. 79% audience score, though. Okay, that's more like it. Metascore, 43. IMDb has this at a flat 6 out of 10. The user score and Letterboxd has 2.4 out of 5 for their rating. Now, this is only available in theatres currently, so if you want to check it out, you know, post-Christmas, pre-New Year, malaise setting in, you'll have to go to your nearest theatre to watch it. But it will eventually be on Max or whichever streaming service does your DC movies. Now, we're not going to spoil the film, but we're going to talk about it. Before we do that, though, John, what were your thoughts on the first Aquaman? And as a kind of top level, the DCEU is now dead. Long live the DCEU. What are your kind of overall thoughts on how it all went?
Well, I mean, I think this movie, I think, is, and I'm going to steal some thoughts from the film cast, kind of on accident, but also, like, you know, it is things I had felt. The biggest problem with the DCEU was that it tried to expedite what Marvel was doing, right? It tried to dive into the Avengers film without setting up each of those characters ahead of time. They didn't want to wait. And that never fixed. It always felt wrong because of that. And that's why you have these movies that are hard to tell where they fall in the timeline. And it's, you're starting to see that now with Marvel having to try to retrofit things into the 20 years, especially I think Eternals is the biggest one where they're like, no, this happened before, but it was never referenced by anybody. And every audience member was like, that doesn't make any sense that people would have referenced the giant hand coming out of, right? Like that the Eternals issues is the entire DCEU. Like it never felt like it got up, you know, like it just jumped into the deep end and was drowning the entire time and nothing could save it. Even Aquaman, who can breathe underwater. And for me, Aquaman, I like Jason Momoa a lot, in fact, and he's the highlight of Fast X, right? Like he was the only thing I really liked about Fast X this year. And but I don't think I like underwater movies very much. They look really dumb in the first Aquaman whenever they were standing around having dialogue, right? Like, because they're like swimming and it looks stupid. It's not, it shouldn't, but it does. And now that we've seen Avatar The Way of Water, Aquaman looks even worse by comparison, because like that movie looks incredible. And they actually, Cameron made people go underwater for an insane amount of times because Cameron is Cameron, you know? And I've come to I don't think I get Wan's tone with film in general. Like there are a few of his movies that have worked for me. He has this, what was the movie I really hated that he did a couple years
Malignant.
Ago?
I loved that film.
A lot of people did. Right. And it's, I think because I come to that movie with an expectation of one tone, and I don't think Wan and I are on the same page. And that's, I kind of feel the same with this movie. It's like, a lot of it just feels real dumb, but I kind of think that Wan has this kind of whimsy about him that I don't get on the same page as, and so it always feels cheesy to me, where I think that's kind of the intention, and it just doesn't work for my sensibilities. And that first Aquaman, a lot of people were really up on it. I was like lukewarm at best, and I'm like, yeah, there's stuff here, but there's things I don't enjoy. And this movie is a mess for a lot of reasons, I think, outside of James Wan's fault. There's the Amber Heard of it all because of the Johnny Depp stuff. They cut her, they sideline her, but she's still in the movie. But like, you can tell where there are like major that she would have been prominent much more if there wasn't all the other stuff going on. There's some insane just the fact that we needed a paragraph to summarize what's happening in this film is then embodied in the film, because the film itself realizes that we don't have enough information to tell the story they want to tell. So they have to find characters to dump so much exposition. It is unbearable at times. And it's also stupid exposition, because a lot of the lore is just like, this is dumb. The opening, and if you've seen the trailer for Aquaman, you hear a voiceover I'm sorry, I'm jumping into my review of the film, but you kind of pushed me into it. But in the trailer, there's a voiceover of Aquaman talking about, like, oh, I finally got a job. And it's just like, none of that makes sense. Like, none of it. Like, why are you still living on land? Like, and your child can go underwater. Why can't you take your kid to Atlantis? Like, what are you doing? And the whole voiceover sequence is the opening of this film. And at first, you're like, who is he telling this to? And it's supposed to be the audience, you think. And then it's revealed that he's actually talking to a character. You're like, oh, okay. He's not just, they're doing the whole, since the last time you saw me, kind of like TV opening, because it's been 5 years, but it's to a character. So you're like, oh, okay. That kind of makes a little bit of sense, especially there's a little joke there that kind of works. But then he keeps talking, and it becomes very clear he's not talking to that character. He's now directly talking to the audience. And it's like, which is it, movie? And that's, I think, the summary of this movie. It's like, which is it? What are you doing here? Because it's so messy. It's so clunky. And the fun that happens, and there are moments of fun. I actually was surprised how much I was into Patrick Wilson in this film, because a lot of times he doesn't work for me as an actor. And I was like, oh, I'm actually kind of vibing the buddy comedy part, which might just be I like buddy comedies and it just works for me. But everything else, I was bored at times. I was so sad for Nicole Kidman. Grateful for Willem Dafoe getting out of this, I think, somehow. But yeah. And then also, like, they crammed the second season of Book of Boba Fett in here, and I'm just like, please stop. Sorry to Maura Morrison, but you might be the most boring serious actor on the planet, because when you're trying to be serious, I'm just like, stop. Kick butt, please. Like, I can't with you. Yeah, sorry. But yeah, so I didn't love Aquaman, and I don't love this one. That's pretty clear. But yeah.
I'll take it, JB. I'll take it. Yeah, I mean, DCU dead. I was just looking at the films that came out in it when you were talking. I was like, there are some good films there, but mostly it does just seem a bit drossy, to be honest. Man of Steel, I know people like it. I think it's fine. You know, the score is better than the film by far. Batman v Superman is not great. Suicide Squad isn't particularly... I didn't mind Suicide Squad, but Wonder Woman is good. Justice League is not. Aquaman, fine. Shazam, I like Shazam. I had a good time with that. Birds of Prey had a good time with that. I thought, man, they're turning the corner. Wonder Woman 1984. Jesus Christ.
Wow.
A film which pretty much sank Patty Jenkins' career so far.
Career. Yeah.
Exactly.
Wild.
Zack Snyder's Justice League, I know it's not officially part of it, but I actually enjoyed that. The Suicide Squad, great.
Yeah,
Black Adam, fine.
Yeah.
Shazam, Fury of the Gods, not great. The Flash was fine. Blue Beetle was fine.
Wait. Blue Beetle is not part of it.
But if you look at
the next generation.
If you look at the DCEU filmography on Wikipedia, it lists it simply because it was released in the confines of this awful cinematic universe.
It might be in Gunn's favor to not include that, because as much as I think it's a solid film, and I think there is an audience who was really clamoring for something like Blue Beetle, the fact that it's kind of fallen flat and it is going to be associated with the DCEU because of the timing, I think you just cut your losses and just let Superman, Legacy? I don't remember what he's calling it.
Oh, I think it's Legacy, yeah.
But let that be the first one and just accept it. I started this, but this film, as I was saying, like the DCU trying to be Marvel, but doing it in a short form version, that's what this movie is also trying to do. Like, there's so many Marvel movie references in this movie. It's basically Thor Ragnarok in a lot of ways.
Except Thor Ragnarok.
It's great.
I like Thor Ragnarok. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are so many Marvel references to this that, you know, there is a literal, and I mean literal, Thor and Loki reference in this.
Yeah, film. I was about to say that too. Yeah, exactly. Like, literally. It's not even subtle. It's like Jason Momoa was like, hey, this was a good movie. Let's do that movie on top of this other movie. And then let's add Lord of the Rings to it for some reason. Like, you basically have a Sauron in this.
They literally have a Sauron. There are so many films scattered throughout. And I think the kind of final moments of this film, I think, was pretty much, we know we're going out. I think the final shots were done after the decision. We're like, all right, let's just go out with a a wink and a nod and a slap to the face of our rival. Whether it works for you or not is up for discussion. But John and I both got it immediately. But
yeah,
I think before I go on to the film, I think with the DCEU, I think Warner and DC relied too heavily on the public's built-in knowledge of Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman to basically skip the heavy lifting. I think in their heads, they're like, well, they know who Batman is and Wonder Woman, Superman. We don't need to spend four films each building them up. We can just go straight to the Justice League. Whereas with Marvel, you're starting with Iron Man. I guess I mean, people know the Hulk, but Thor, you need to build these characters up for us to really give a damn about them. Because comic book fans might know and love them, but the audiences don't. We do now. Whereas Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, I think the execs in the suits were like, well, they know who they are. We can stick them in a film together and people will come to see it. That's all we need to do. And no, you cannot do that. That is not how you do a cinematic universe. But let's get on to Aquaman then and the Lost Kingdom. I thought the first film was quite fun when I first saw it. Upon second viewing, it lost some of that luster for me and it ended up kind of just smacking me in the face with OTT colourful effects. I did still like the trench part though. But for this film then, John, similar to what you said, I think we spoke off air about this and we said, yeah, it's clearly a mess because of off screen incidents and issues. That has really forced the director's hand an awful lot here about what he can and can't do, how he's got to chop and change things. And at times it shows horribly. And the film is a mess. Tonally, it's a mess. And like you, I think there's some fun moments in it. But unlike you, I was never bored with this. Now, it's one of those films where I'll give the old catchphrase that it ain't a great film, but I had a great time with it at times. Because it's not a good film. It patently is a average film. I've seen the usual rhetoric that, you know, worst film ever, worst film of the year. Guys, we're not to be that guy, but go and see more films. If this is the worst film of the year for you, see more films. Because this is just all this is basically somebody's fed every superhero film in the last decade into an AI machine and said, make me a film. And this is what they've given us. It's just the same old kind of formulaic stuff that you can put anyone in the lead role, any character and any bad guy. And it's the same old, same old. That's all this is. It's not offensive. It's not terrible because of that. It's just, it exists. It's going to fizzle out very quickly. And it is a bit of a sad way to end a pretty sad cinematic universe. But I would be lying if I said I wasn't having fun with a lot of this, because it's more light and flimsy than 2018's Aquaman. It's more loose around the edges. They play into the silliness a lot more. And while it isn't great, it felt so much so less serious than the first one. Upon rewatching Aquaman, they take themselves so damn seriously in that film. It's all, yes, of course, Momoa is whooping it up, but it is a very serious film and everyone is very, you know, playing it very straight. Whereas here, they embrace the clearly silly nature of their film. And it really does help the film out. Now, that doesn't mean it's a great film. But like you, I think Patrick Wilson was very, very fun as Orm in a complete 180 of his character. He was extremely straight in the first film. Here,
big time.
They've just said, well, you know, here's your paycheck. Do what you want. And he's having fun. And I liked that an awful lot. It is stupid, though. There are so many things in my notes which I've got, which are, you know, I was watching at one point, you know, they're like, where's the bad guy hiding? Where's Black Manta hiding? And, you know, they give where the guy's hiding. And it's this really like unsubtle volcano, which is spewing green gas, which has just happened. Like, oh, I wonder where the villain's hiding. It's stuff like that. And Patrick Wilson, you mentioned exposition. Yeah, I think this is one, maybe one of the ones you were referring to. But at one point, Patrick Wilson gives an exposition dump about this the Lost Kingdom, and you could see the light leave his body and the paycheck reach his bank account as he was saying it, because it was the most kind of I'm reading off a cue card behind the camera moment. There was no passion or love for what he was saying. You could tell he was reading it and thinking, I have no idea what I'm being asked to say, but I'll say it because I need to. And that kind of unintentional humor was kind of getting me through the film a little bit as well. And his chemistry with Momoa, I think, is really quite fun. When Patrick Wilson and Jason Momoa are on screen together, film is, I'm not going to say great, but the fun is great. I was really good. They're really good bouncing off each other, proper buddy cop type thing, opposites attract and all that. When they're not on screen, though, this is where the entire film just falls apart for me. Like Black Manta, you know, nothing against Yaya, because I think he's a fabulous actor.
Good actor, yeah.
But he is the, you know, he's got nothing to do. He has no arc. He has no dimension to his character. So we've got another bad villain. Amber Heard as Mera. I mean, she's in it more than I thought, but not in it as much as she probably, like you said, would have been had she had all of the trial issues not happened. Nicole Kidman, I mean, speaking of people who have turned up for a fun paycheck and basically been told, you know, give us a few lines, give us a few speeches and then on your way. Now, poor Nicole Kidman, she's in it for a few minutes and then gone. Dolph Lundgren is officially the worst actor I've probably seen in years. Just, there's one bit, I don't actually remember what he says. He says something about firing something, like a cannon. And I wish I had a rewind function at the cinema, because he turned around and he literally went, what has this guy just said? Because you can't understand him, and he cannot emote, and he's acting against Jason Momoa's charisma and Nicole freaking Kidman, and he is being shown up like a sore thumb. But so
he's in Expendables 4 this year too. You know what I'm saying? Like it's two movies where he's just like awful, and you're like, oh my god.
He's great when he's not. I say that's a lie. He's fine when he's not speaking. When he's just being like the. I don't mean to say like the a big fucking guy.
Yeah,
he's a presence, and when he's interacting with Orm wordlessly, you know that I could see, I get it, I dug that, but nobody. I mean, I liked Randall Park's character again. He comes back as Dr. Stephen Shin. I liked him in this, or at least his arc, because he got one, or
was
his
he
development.
In another movie?
He was in the first Aquaman film.
Really, I do not remember him in the first Aquaman.
He was definitely in the first one, but
man, yeah, he's there's a credit for it. So yeah,
he's definitely there. Other than that, I mean, I want to go through all the cast, but nobody really. Covers himself in glory, but Jason Momoa is having fun. He turns the Momoa-ness up by a few notches here, and I dig it. But you know, story wise, it is what it is. It's OTT. It lacked any kind of real substance or threat or stakes, because we all know this is the end of this iteration of the DCEU, unless they're going to pull a multiverse one day and bring them all back, which I hope they don't. But yeah, what more can I say? It's for me, it was a fun, very flawed superhero film. It's a shame that this is the last one in this cinematic universe, because, you know, I think there are other films that they probably could have or probably would have wanted to have ended with. But I didn't hate this film. I think it's average. I think it's straight down the middle. If I were to rate it now, I'd probably give it 2.5 out of 5 with my new rating system.
Okay.
Because it's fine. It's not a bad film. I had fun with it, but that's about it for me. What about you, though, to go further on any of those points, or of course, your own ones?
Well, you surprised me with that rating, because that's probably where I throw it, because I am more inclined to give the harsh criticism for this film, partly because there's another movie that's out right now on streaming that is getting a lot of hate because it is nothing more than a derivative piece of work by filmmaker named Zack Snyder, ironically. And that movie's getting so much hate for that. Like, everyone's like, oh, it's just Star Wars. It's just blah. I'm like, Aquaman is like 8 other movies, though. Like, it's not an original piece. And it literally, I don't want to spoil, I won't even spoil who, but there's a Jabba the Hutt character in this movie.
Oh, there is.
And I'm like, how is this movie not getting that same criticism? And the reason is because no one's going to see this movie, proof in the box office, right? This movie underperformed in the box office, where Rebel Moon's on Netflix and everybody's watching it because it's on Netflix. And it's
132 million, by the way, for this, with a box office of about 205.
Right. And worldwide, right? Like, that's the worldwide box. People aren't going to see this because, well, let's look at all of the DC movies from this year. All of them have bombed. People were done with this. Even the one that seemed to have the biggest fan reaction was Blue Beetle, but people didn't go see it. Like, by large comparison, like, people slept on all of the comic book movies. Really, there's the exception being Guardians. The other movies mostly did not do well this year because comic book fatigue is clearly real. But this movie, I feel like it's so clearly a product of contract completion. You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't feel like, I think Momoa loved the property. I think Juan loved the property, but there's so many things crammed into this. It is almost like Juan knew this is my last comic book movie. Let's do everything in this movie. And it feels stuffed, and it's not super long. I mean, I think it's 2 hours and 4 minutes or something like that. So yeah, like, but when you read that synopsis and when you see how much it requires to explain what you're going to deal with, it's like you clearly did too much. Like, pull Manta out of this. Just have the stupid trident thing be your movie. And, or better yet, Black Manta is the Lex Luthor to Aquaman, right? Like, he is the villain. Let him be the villain. He wasn't really the villain in the first movie because they make it Ocean Master, which, one of the lamest comic book villain names of all time.
Ocean Master.
Yeah, I hate that name. And I thought that was a really cheesy part of that movie. I'm like, why isn't Black Manta just the villain? And then I'm like, oh, well, the second movie, then Black Manta will be the villain. Nope. He's going to get a submarine. That doesn't make any sense. Like, it's a gigantic ship. And Randall Park's character in this movie, I like Randall Park as an actor, just for clarity, but my God, he exists for exposition and nothing else in this film. Like, he is literally a character. If he steps on screen, it's like, I'm about to explain a bunch of nonsense so that the movie makes sense, but it doesn't make sense. It's just a bunch of nonsense that is being spouted by some guy who really doesn't understand what he's saying. apparently, though, the fuel source in this movie, much like they didn't learn from Solo, that movies about people chasing fuel sources are boring, unless it's an oil baron and directed by Paul Thomas Anderson. So, you know, this is... It's baffling at times to watch this, because it's like, when it's working, it's working, but there's so much in between that is not. And I guess bored isn't even the right phrase. I was frustrated. I was aggravated. 'Cause I'm like, why is this so messy? Like, trim this out, get rid of this. Why? I mean, the fact that he has a child, even his own exposition, he's like, I finally got a job. I'm like, dude, you were superheroing before the first movie. Yeah. Like, we enter in, you're already Aquaman in that first film. It's not like you get flashback origin story for Aquaman, but no, you don't need a job. Like, what is this nonsense about you finally got a job? I'm the king of the, like, no. Shut up. That was never your concern. You weren't like in the first movie, like, I'm a bum. And then even within their own DCU, if you saw The Flash, there is a post-credit scene with Aquaman and he's drunk and upset. That Aquaman is not in this movie. This is a different Aquaman than what we saw in the post-credits of The Flash. Now, I don't exactly know when any of these movies take place anymore, so maybe that one, maybe it's corrected because of Flashpoint at the end of that. You know, I have no idea, but no matter what, there's so many elements of this film that feel disconnected from everything that came before it. And also, all of the connective stuff feels forced or not given enough weight. Black Manta should be your main villain in this film, and he is not. He is an afterthought, and that is a huge problem because we're still with him a lot. Like, it reminds me of... what movie is it with the spear where Constantine? I think it's Constantine where the guy is chasing a spear, the spear of that killed Jesus.
Yes.
Man, what?
Yeah.
Cause that's like, he's got this trident. He doesn't really understand what he's doing, but he's driven to do these things because there's this other force that really wants this stuff. And you're just like, oh my God, movie. Why? He had motivation. His dad was killed by Aquaman. He wants to kill Aquaman. Boom. There's your movie. Keep it simple, please. Like, well, don't.
Yep. And what I liked about Black Manta is, I won't spoil much about anything else, but I've said about this about Marvel films and other properties that I would like to see a villain that's kind of, you know, sticks the course a little bit, doesn't just come in for one film, die, and then we have a new film. I like the fact that they Black Manta, and he is a ongoing antagonist. But to your point, he's not the main antagonist again, which isn't great. And his motivation, his behaviors in this film, his attitude and his kind of end attitude as well, I like that as well. I like the final thing he does and says in this film. I'm like, yes, I'm glad that happened. And that's all I'll say on that. But I wish more superhero films would just continue with an ongoing villain.
Yeah, I like that idea too. And I would have enjoyed more of it. And they, I guess you could also argue that Patrick Wilson's character being introduced back in is a continuation of another villain, although a different, it's again, they literally call out the borrowing that they've done of the plot line, but, yeah, it's just a mess of a movie. And I don't know if that's because of all the reshoots. Cause there was, this movie was, there's tons of like behind the scenes, like controversy type stuff that happened with this. There was things about Amber Heard being like locked out of it. Like, so all of that, maybe that's the issue. Maybe the Lost Kingdom stuff was like, it's too ingrained in the other elements to not feel like that was always the goal. But like, if that's your goal, I think you start with that being the opening narration instead of this Aquaman needing a job and like this drama that isn't really part of the film, you know, like him ruling, like there's a few scenes where like he's sitting as the king, but they don't amount to anything.
Yeah.
It's just like annoying sequences that take up time that don't pay off or matter. Yeah, it's bad. I don't think it's the worst movie of the year. Just to jump off of what you said there, like I think people are maybe being a tad bit too hyperbolic, but I do think it's bad. And yet there's, James Wan is a competent filmmaker. I may not mesh with his vibe all the time, but yeah, he's able to give you some awesome sequences. It's just you feel the mechanisms of it all. Like it's so overwrought with content, and I can't get past all of that. Like it's clunky as all get out, and you know, just those moments. And again, I think the Wilson and Momoa, like if they did a buddy comedy outside of Aquaman, like if they did like a cop movie, I'd probably watch it because I enjoyed their chemistry. That to me, the most fun I've seen Patrick Wilson having on screen in a while. Like I was like, yeah, oh, he's actually when they're vibing, because there are the scenes like you said where he's clearly just like, okay, fine, I'm going to pay the favor so I can direct Insidious 7. but yeah, please don't. But yeah, didn't like this. I think we didn't say this, but usually we'll do a spoiler episode, but we're recording this really late in the week, so we're not going to do a spoiler ep for this. And I won't spoil it, but I think the worst and most pointless post-credit scene in all of comic book movies is in this movie.
Well, yeah, it does tie up a joke from the film. So
Without spoiling it, the one thing that the film cast points out is they show part of that scene, part of the end stinger, they show in the like epilogue of the film. Yeah. And then they cut back to it, and I don't think that's ever happened. The film cast says it's never happened. I don't think it's ever happened. Usually the post credits is a separate standalone scene. I don't
recall it happening.
And this one was like, you could have already shown this. You could have shown this there, or cut that little part out when we first see it and just put that whole scene as the singer instead of it being this weird, like, return to moment. And again, for it to it's a payoff of a dumb joke. I'd like to point out too, that joke early in the movie is really dumb. It works, but it's really dumb. Like, it's like, okay, yeah, it's a big brother picking on the fish out of water, so to speak, literal in this sense. Yeah.
People in my theater were making some disturbed noises at that scene.
Sure. Yes.
I was like, oh, very gross. But I think that scene would have been much. Hey, look, I didn't mind it, but I would have actually preferred it, like you say, than had it been the full scene in the post credits. Kind of final stinger was this full scene, because then it would have been a kind of funny WTF moment, like, what is that it?
Also sentimental, because there is an emotional part to that, right? Like the there's a conversation that the brothers have that it pays off. Like, it would have been a nice little, you know, okay, little was like rose on the cake sort of thing, you know, like
cherry on the icing on the cake type thing.
Yeah.
And instead, back to reshoots. Let's just say that they weren't reshooting a final scene for that.
And again, I don't know if you know this is the last movie. Why even? You know, it feels obligatory at this point, and I hate that. Like, you know, just no. Let's not make these post credit scenes if they're not actually doing something. You know.
No, I dig it. Okay, well then, Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. Before we move on, then, John, are we on level ground there, or are you more positive or negative than me? Because I don't think I can tell.
I think I'm a 2.5. So I'm leaning into the criticisms a little more.
That's fair enough. For the first time, possibly in BAMP history, I'm leaning in more into the wackiness. It's usually John, rather than me moaning about things. But John is leaning into the criticism, though there were a few nice messages here about single parents and, you know, real heroes not giving up. Like, that's cool. You know, it all felt very kind of stuff you'd find written on your aunt's wall in the kitchen or something.
He's not a single parent.
No, he's not.
But they act like he is. I mean, like that opening monologue is acting like he's a single parent. But it's like your mom is back. You have your wife. Like there's a whole thing about don't hit my wife. Like it's you know what I'm saying. Like
I'm thinking about I guess Tom, which is Temuera's character. I guess him. I guess, but there was nice messages, but yeah, it felt a little bit like sort of stuff you'd find in a craft shop on an old piece of wood painted on it. So. We're both going 2.5 out of 5 then for Aquaman and The Lost Kingdom as we bid farewell to the DC Extended Universe. We never knew you. And a final part of that is the co-CEOs of DC, James Gunn and Peter Safran, stated that Aquaman 2 will take place following the reset of the timeline due to The Flash, and that it will be directly followed by a slate of projects given the title of Chapter 1, Gods and Monsters, which mentions the true start, will occur in 2025. So this Aquaman 2 takes place after The Flash and the whole reset. And then that's it dead now. The DCU will begin in 2025 with the subtitle Chapter 1, Gods and Monsters. So very interesting. It's come back in a year's time when we review the first DCU film, and hopefully it's a good start for the universe. Now let's move on then, JB, to our next segment, Concessions of a Cinephile, where we just like to have a little water cooler chat about anything to do with film. And this week we thought we'd chat about something we've spoken about on and off air, as well as on and off air for years now, and that is the theatre going experience. Going to the movies and having a great time, or so we hope. With the rise of streaming, the cost of living, and just more in-house issues with the theatre. Is it still an enjoyable experience? How do we find it? And I know John was very excited or passionate to talk about this one. And
always.
My theatre is the one I go to or cinema for my European friends. Mine's about 20 minutes away, so easy drive. It's a Cineworld. It's a big old chain, and that has all of the mod cons apart from all of the treats that you guys in the States get. But and we would never ever advocate for the cinema going experience to die out. That is our bread and butter. That's our lifeblood here on the BAMP for John and myself, and it has been for years and years and years. Going to the cinema to watch the newest films, whether they're huge blockbusters or small independent films, the theatre-going experience has been something which has kept us going through highs and lows, through the good and the bad, for decades. And that escapism, or, you know, I can't speak for John, but, you know, if you're feeling down one day, you know, go and watch a film. And it could be a superhero film. You know, get you out of that funk a little bit, and you know, give you a bit of hope or something. Or if you want to feel philosophical, go and watch the latest film from, you know, insert European director here. But it's that experience. We don't want to die, my friend. But the studio, the theatres themselves, man, doing quite a good job of making it of quite a frustrating trip, aren't they?
Yeah. In a way, this conversation is directed to the theatre chains. Desperately want people to come back because that's how they make their money, right? People have to come to the theater. They have to buy tickets. They have to buy concessions because that's really where theaters make their money. And they have to do it consistently, not just on the one or two big movies of the year. Like this year, it was not the comic book movies that brought people to the theaters. It was instead Barbie and Oppenheimer that seemed to really do it.
And
we've had two video game properties because Five Nights at Freddy's also shocked the world, especially because that was a same day streaming experience and people still chose to go to the theater for that communal experience. And that is really what going to the movies is supposed to be about. Yeah. It's supposed to be a shared experience, right? Like it's not just getting to see it on the big screen the way the filmmaker intended. It's also seeing it with other people, hearing the reactions. I went to see Anyone But You the other day. I went at 1 o'clock on a Wednesday afternoon, and I expected that movie, Matt, to be by myself because it was 1 o'clock on a Wednesday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, there were like 15, 16 people, which isn't a lot by theater standards. But for my theater, especially 1 o'clock on a Wednesday afternoon, that was quite a few people. And six of them were together. There was like a group, a gaggle of old women who had had lunch and had come to enjoy the theater. When I got it, I was the first one in the theater, as I often am. They joined. They didn't see me for a minute, even though it's a very small theater and I have a very shiny head. And I heard them like, oh, we're alone. We can just sit wherever we want. My theater recently added assigned seats like within the last 6 months. No, it's the worst thing ever, dude, because our theaters are never crowded enough to justify the assigned seats. And so people just walk in and then they say things like, we can just sit wherever we want, even though you have assigned seats. Right? Like, so, well, because again, if there is a packed house, people will have to respect it. But when there's four people in the theater, they're just going to sit where they want. So why waste time? Because it slows the ticket buying process. This is just another. There's so much to talk about with this. If you are going to the theater and you are going to drop $30, you know, if you're alone, one ticket, $10, popcorn, soda, $20. $30 minimum if you are going to do that whole thing, right? And odds are if you don't go very often, you're going to do that whole experience, right? Like, it's going to be your thing. Then you go, you're expecting to give up 2 hours of your time for the movie.
Yep. And that's 2D tickets, by the way. Let's get that.
Yeah, yes. 2D, not IMAX, not any of those weird other, like, immersive experiences that are now trying to get people in just to go. And now you have to sit through 20 minutes of trailers. If it starts on time, which my theater actively starts everything 5 minutes late. You know, my theater is getting, it's, I don't think they've had a remodel for 20 years. So like the seats aren't great. The seat assignments now are retrofitted. They don't all really make sense. And it's, we've seen a big trend because theaters are not making as much money. They're cutting staff, right? We're seeing that in a lot of different areas. Like, you go to customer service areas and there's nobody there because there's only three people working during the day because they don't have the money to pay them, or so they say, as they make billions of dollars in profit. But not the theaters. The theaters are notoriously losing money. The shutdown hurt them even more. They were already in trouble. The lockdown hurt them more. And streaming has really hurt the theater because a lot of people would just rather wait and not pay the extra money. They're already paying $10 for Netflix. Why pay $10 per movie when they pay $10 on Netflix and get to see 50 movies, you know? And since the 50s, TV has injured film, right? And it's only gotten more severe as TV has become the way people seem to prefer consuming media is in prestige TV type stuff. So a lot working against the movies that theaters have started cutting employees. And now where you used to go to the movies and you'd go to the box office and you'd buy your ticket, most theaters, at least in my area, have shut down box offices. And you must go either to a digital kiosk, which my theater does not have, or if they don't have that, the concession stand to buy your ticket, which means you are now condensing what used to be two separate lines into one line. And if you only want to buy a ticket and you're waiting on a family of 10 who have ordered 8 popcorns and 6 sodas for one poor employee to not only ring out everybody, let them pick their seats, because now that's an assigned seat thing. They have to pick their seats on the screen. Most people don't know that. So they're like, oh, I don't know which one. And you have to wait as they stare at a screen of things. They often will pick an assigned seat next to somebody else because that's what the stupid program defaults to. Then, you know, this employee's got to run over here, get popcorn, get this. This kid spilled the icy that they just handed them. And like, it's a cluster F every time you go to the theater that I get there even earlier than I used to, because I'm trying to avoid that line of like just an insane amount of people who are getting there last minute. Now, what prompted this conversation today? I went the night before we're recording this to see The Boys in the Boat at my local theater, expecting a Thursday night where nothing new came out this weekend. Today is Friday when we're recording this. Nothing else is out. Everything came out last weekend, either before Christmas or on Christmas, right? The Boys in the Boat and The Color Purple, my theater got on Christmas Day.
Yep.
So I went Thursday night thinking, hey, no one will be there. It's a George Clooney movie that's getting really bad, you know, reviews. It's a Thursday night. I'm going to go to the 7 o'clock show. No one will be there. Packed for my theater. And other people were going to see other stuff. Like, it was a busier Thursday night than I was anticipating. So I'm standing in line waiting to get, there's two lines. I'm standing in one line waiting to buy my ticket and get my small free popcorn that I got and my small free soda that I got because of their rewards programs that they're doing to try to get people coming to the theater. And the people to my left, they're slowing the line down. I don't know what's going on. There's something going on. They're the line next to me really going slow. I hear this old man who's standing behind them go, "What's the holdup?
Here we go."
And the cashier starts to try to, you know, "Oh, well, we're trying to solve this problem." He's like, "Well, solve it somewhere else." Now, I'm sure thinking, that's, wow.
Possible, sir.
Yeah, I'm sure this guy must be late for his movie or something that he's so angry. Now, it's 7 o'clock. The Boys in the Boat starts at 7:15. I get my ticket. I get my popcorn. I walk past this very angry man who's still waiting. And I go sit in the theater. There's already a few people in the Boys in the Boat. And sure enough, like less than 2 minutes later, that old man comes and with his wife, they sit in the same row as me, two seats to my left.
Perfect.
And I'm like, of course. And also, you were so angry at how long it was taking, and you are 10 minutes early to the movie that won't start on time. And then we'll have 25 minutes of trailers on top of it starting 5 minutes late. So 7:15, the Boys in the Boat actually started playing at 7:45. The movie, the opening title credit started at 7:45. And this is a problem, theater. One, you're going to get angry people when you condense lines, because that dude didn't buy popcorn. They brought in their own bottled water. They brought in their own bag of cashews. I had to listen to them have this conversation. So they didn't buy your concessions. They yelled at another customer. So I'm sure those people were not comfortable in that moment that they are getting yelled at for trying to spend money at your establishment. And I'm sorry, but while that old man was out of line, he had no reason to be that impatient. The theaters are setting that up. When you don't have those digital kiosk options, which I don't think he would have used, and you don't have a designated area for people who just want to get the ticket and get into the theater, you're going to have issues. And you might say, "Oh, well, you can just buy your tickets on the app." And yes, that's true. And in the old days, there was a person standing between you and the theater. So like you had to hand your ticket to someone. And that at one point, they would have a little scanner and they could scan your ticket on your phone if you had that. They have phased that position out most days. Like on a busy weekend night, maybe there's somebody standing up there to take your ticket. Most of the time, there's nobody there. So people could just walk in, again, defeating the whole point of them trying to get people to buy tickets. But two, you are creating a situation where you've made convenience inconvenient. I bought my ticket ahead of time. I paid a 50-cent convenience fee, which Regal charges. And now I still have to wait in line to get my ticket because you don't have another resource for me to do that. And I think that's my point, theaters, is people who don't go all the time don't know all of these little bugaboos they're going to run into like I do. I literally know how many movies I've seen at my Regal this year because I got a free soft drink and 4,000 bonus points because I saw 75 movies with my Regal Unlimited Pass this year. And I know all of these little things. I know what I have to plan for. I know that I'm showing up way too early for these movies. I could show up 10 minutes late and still not miss the beginning of the film. But I still show up early because I'm old school and that's just my way. But people who only come to see Barbie for the first time, they haven't been to a theater since the pandemic, they don't know they're going to be sitting in silence for 10 minutes. They don't know they're going to have to pick their assigned seat. They don't know these things. And if they have an unpleasant experience, what are the odds they're coming back? And that I think we need to address these things. Like I see the benefit of trailers. You want people to know what's coming out so they'll come back. But instead, they get aggravated. And they don't remember what they saw because you showed them 20 trailers before the movie started. And then they sat there for 2 hours kind of unhappy because they were like, "Well, I thought we'd be out of here. The movie's 2 hours long. I thought we'd be out at 3, but it's going to be 4:30 now before we're leaving." You know, like things like that weigh in on people. People hate waiting in line anyways, mm-hmm. but you've created a intolerable experience because if you don't want popcorn, you should be able to get your ticket and go sit down, and you can't anymore, at least not specifically at my theater, but I've been to several theaters. I don't exclusively go to this theater, and a lot of them are doing this. You know, there was one that has kept their box office longer than other theaters in our area because my theater dropped their box office like 2 years ago. Like it's pretty much since the pandemic, we've not had a normal box office situation. But there was another theater about 45 minutes away that had the box office until like 3 months ago. And but they have digital kiosks, at least. There's still another way to get around it. And there's a separate place. You're not buying your ticket at concessions. I think that is the worst thing. And I understand the motivation. You want us to buy concessions. But, man, forcing people to have to wait behind a family of someone who has little kids. They're buying all those little kid packs, you know, so each kid gets their own little box, and it's so cute. Until you're waiting for 20 minutes and your movie is starting and there's that anxiety and they don't know that there's 20 minutes of trailers because they've not been to the theater that often. Like, these are things I really feel we need to address, theaters. Like, you need people there, but you have to make the experience enjoyable, and it has to be a positive experience. And again, even little things, my theater, they don't even come to close the doors anymore because they don't have the staff to do it. But there's like Ferrari was playing across the hall from us at the Boys in the Boat. So the first 5 minutes of the movie, you hear the engines roaring from the Ferrari races. And I'm like, oh man, I got to get up and close the door. And I don't mind doing it, but come on. Like,
it's don't your job to do it, John.
Well, don't prop the doors open even. Like, what's the point? Like, there's a door, there's a knob. You don't need to prop it open. Just let it be closed because other people don't know they should go close it. Like, whoever was in Ferrari should have closed that door just because, like, wow, this movie's real loud. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's those things that you have to consider the whole experience. If you want people to come to the theater, it needs to be enjoyable. The projection needs to look good. Those are other issues that we won't get into right now, but I didn't mean to stand on a soapbox for quite so long, Matt, and just vent, but this is something I value this experience so much that I am afraid we're going to lose it because they are pushing people away. So what have been your experiences? What are your thoughts on all the stuff I just dumped out on top of you here?
Well, I feel like you've been waiting to get off your chest for a long time, JB. I'll give you a few minutes to breathe now, my man. Basically, similarly to what you said, we have the same over here where my theatre I mentioned does have the digital booths, which you can just walk up and get your ticket. And that's great. And I order mine on the app. That's great. I just get the guy to scan the QR code. But I remember growing up and I remember going to the box office, which at the time was, I went to a different cinema, was located outside of the theatre. So just outside in the foyer. And, you know, you'd go up. I remember going up and saying, oh, one ticket to Revenge of the Sith, please. And I'm getting a ticket stub. It's similarly to when you go to gigs and you don't really get tickets anymore. So
no,
that was always the first part of the experience. And I've seen many people online who have posted their movie ticket collection. Now, whether that's from the last 20 years or going back to the last 50, 60 years, whatever, it's still cool to see them.
When I started Burke Reviews, my wife bought me a little, like a shadow box thing where it had like a little slip to keep movie tickets in. And I have all of my tickets. Yeah, and at some point they turned from tickets to paper receipts. And then eventually I stopped doing it because I'm like, it's really lame to keep a receipt. Like the tickets had like weight and heft to them. Paper receipts don't. Yeah, they did.
I give it to the guy at the door. He'd rip it for me. So there you go. I've got my tickets. They've ripped my ticket. So I can go into the cinema now and enjoy it. But I mean, a lot of the problems you've already mentioned. So I won't labour it too much. But you look at the price of tickets at the turn of the decade. The price of tickets had doubled since the beginning of the decade. That is already an issue. Now you've already mentioned the pandemic and a lot of issues would have been stemming from that because at the time we thought theaters were going to close. That was the kind of economic landscape was saying these buildings haven't been showing films for a year or so. It's non-sustainable. And of course, we mentioned the economic side of it. You've got to pay the staff. You've got to pay for maintenance to the premises and everything as well. And given the studios their share of the ticket prices, of course, with the cost of budgets going up, there's the need for studios to be making more money, therefore ticket prices, which is an unfair payment going to the movie going public, who, like you say, there are some who will only go to watch the new Marvel film or the new DC film or whatever. Yeah, they're having to be, you know, and or there are others who will go and see every film, like the new George Clooney one, which apparently isn't doing very well, who pay the same price because the theaters are pumping out overly produced, overly budgeted films, and I don't like that. But the problem is you need to pay the staff, you need to maintain the premises. But you've hit the nail on the head really, JB, is, and I know somebody who works in a cinema and this is happening, is staff are getting let go. Yeah. There's not enough staff. So I've had the same as you. I've been at the stand before, and I don't begrudge this. Family of four, two adults, two kids, they go to the Baskin Robbins section. A couple of them get a few scoops, but the kids, they get the shakes, which take seemingly 5 minutes to each to make. And that's cool. Like you said, that might be their one, family experience of the holidays, going to watch this film. I think it's Wonka, that's cool, enjoy it. But there was only one person working, like you said, on a Friday night. And there was queues of people who just wanted popcorn. There were some who just wanted a Coke. I wanted ice cream as well. But you kind of feel for them just as much as the people. I don't know, people in the line as well. I feel for the person working behind it, because what can you do if your colleague is either on his break or their break, not in, they've called in sick, they've been let go, or they've been assigned to cleaning the screens or checking tickets? What can you do if you haven't got enough staff? And it's, you and I go quite a lot to be able to see the dwindling number of people, or just the conditions of the cinemas aren't as clean, or they're not as the security isn't as great. Let's say, I'll go into that in a minute, but we go more often, so we see that, whereas somebody doesn't go all the time might not see that and think, well, hold on, I've come here, why aren't you serving me? Serve me next, or where's your colleagues to serve me? Colleagues are at home looking for a new job. The actual experience itself is getting worse. I've mentioned before, how many times you want to go and watch a film, man, whether it's by yourself or if I take my kid, or even if I treat one of the parents to go and watch a film, what are the people in the screening going to be like? People nowadays sit on their phones, they're talking, taking pictures of the screen. Because
I didn't even want to get to that, but yeah.
I mean, I have to. That is my experience. Yeah. Everything you've mentioned, again, I don't want to double down on what you said, because you said it so well, and also, you've already said that in terms of the experience of going there, the price of concessions. Do you have to buy them? No. But everything you said was, for me, spot on. Mm-hmm. People are there buying their ticket. They may have spent 10 minutes in line without the intention of buying it, but if I waited long enough, I might as well get a popcorn and a soda, and that's $15 off £15. Or it's a family, or it's somebody who's going, and that's just the thing, like me, the thing that they do. They always get the same kind of thing. It's expensive enough as it is. But when you go into this theatre and there is no governance, there is no, I don't say security, but there's nothing going on. And you could say the guy getting paid minimum wage, are they going to come in and throw out a group of 15-year-olds, 15 no. teenagers who are causing up? Probably not. But
especially if
everyone else,
if they're the only person working and they're behind the counter, they can't come to the theater and get someone else. So you're right there. I agree. But I think part of the problem why it's gotten increasingly bad is that a lot of those people have never been to a theater before, or haven't been in a theater enough to know the etiquette or the proper protocol. And again, there is no one to enforce the etiquette. Like Alamo Drafthouse is a chain here in the States that notoriously is really good about that. And they are a successful chain. They've had to do a lot of branding, and I don't know if they're also struggling as far, but they do a lot of like retro screenings and things like that. Like they've created a community of movie watchers, right? That's missing from multiplexes. There's not a community of movie watchers. People come for these event movies because they heard about it and they want to be a part of the conversation. It's more for FOMO than it is for the actual love of cinema, like you and I and many of the people who probably listen to this podcast have. And that is, in many ways, we are preaching to the choir by talking about that on a movie podcast. But I think if we got people coming to the theater more, that the communal experience would shape behavior, which we have seen tons of examples of, right? When you go to a place and there is there's always potential for one person to push against the societal norms, and that person should be able to be dealt with by the community. But when the community itself is so disjointed and disconnected, the expectations of behavior aren't communicated in a way where they will know them. And that's a problem. Like if a group of 13-year-olds who have never been to a theater before go to see Five Nights at Freddy's because they love that video game, they don't know how they should behave in there. They're going to behave like they would behave at home, which is most likely pretty open and loosey-goosey, and that's not the theatrical experience. Now, there are some people who would talk no matter what. There are just people who don't get social cues.
But oh, yeah. Some people are just stupid, which I'll just say now. Some of the people who I've been in a theatre with are just stupid. They are rude, and they are, you know, for all intents and purposes, I'm going to say awful people, because they know exactly what they are doing by spoiling other people's experiences.
Yeah, and again, there are definitely horrible people that exist in the world. So, like, those, I want to assume those are the anomalies, although lately it has felt like that is more of the standard. But I feel like if theaters can fix the problems to lure people in, and again, I think, you know, I think in general with the economy, I'm not an economist by any means. I don't fully understand. But it does seem to me like if all the people who sell things collectively decided to just like lower the prices, it would benefit everybody, because the people with no money would be able to suddenly afford things again, and that means they would buy things, which means those companies that maybe they would make less money per item, but they would make more money on the whole because everyone's able to actually buy stuff. I feel like that would be very easy in this microcosm of cinema. Like, the movie theater chains don't make a lot off ticket sales to begin with. If they would lower the price of tickets, and honestly, Hollywood, if you would lower your, maybe chill out on the budgets a little bit, and sell the movies or lease the movies or whatever the correct term is to the theater chains at a lower rate, lower the ticket prices, get people in, keep concessions outrageous. They've always been outrageous. You know, that's where they make their profit anyways. Like, if you could lower the bottom dollar on some of these things to get people back in the theaters, I think you would see a shift in the positivity of the people in the theater. I think you would see people starting to behave like we used to when, you know, you sit and you watch the movie. And again, I think the community, if there was a lot more people in the theater and it wasn't just five of us, the majority would overwhelm those few who don't want to fall in line. And if you had employees who could, you know, actually do their jobs and help them make money and things like that, I think it would increase the overall experience. And again, that's the irony here. It's like, I'm going to use a really crude metaphor, but when your phone is dying, right? When your battery is on its last leg, it starts chirping at you to let you know that the battery is dying. I've always found that ironic, because it's like, well, you're using more battery now, alerting me every 4 seconds that my phone is dying, than you were the whole other time. Don't do that. And it's kind of what we're seeing here. It's like, oh, people aren't coming to the theaters. Let's make the experience worse, because that will make people come back to the theaters, and it won't. Like, you have to spend money to make money. You know, like, that's the old cliche. And if you don't fix these little bugaboo problems, if you don't make the theatrical experience a pleasant one, people won't come back.
Yeah.
People like us will, because we want to see the movies.
But we do.
I seeing anyone but you with an audience made that movie better, because they were laughing, and that made me comfortable to laugh also, because sitting alone in the theater laughing is a little awkward. Like, no one's there to judge me, but it doesn't feel necessary. But when you're in a room full of people and they laugh, it's contagious, and it makes the film better. When you're in a horror movie and people scream, and even if you don't, if you aren't scared, you will laugh at everyone else's.
Get a kick out of it, yeah.
Yes. And so, like, that's the communal part of it. And I want to see movies.
Look at No Way Home, John. We mentioned that. I always use that as my kind of go-to now. The moment where the Spideys come through the portals. People lost their mind at those parts. And, of course, obviously, you could also throw in portals of Endgame and everything. But if I watched No Way Home for the first time on Disney Plus, and that scene came on, you know, you know, Tobey Maguire walked through the portal, I kind of smile and think, oh, nice. But that's it. And I have since kind of gone there and be like, oh, that's cool. But the communal experience made it so much better than what it actually is in reality. And I also just wanted to remember too, to kind of agree with you as well about the trailer, the lack of, man, my film starts at 7. Okay. Start the trailers at 6:30. So my film starts at 7, or put the start time on the ticket. I know that then people, the advertisers will say, well, hold on, no one's going to watch our adverts, but they're still making money from it. Because there are, I think now, on average, when I go and watch a film, there's maybe on average 3 trailers. So 3 trailers, sometimes 4, maybe if you're lucky, there'll be another one, but very rarely. Usually 3 film trailers, which are, of course, aligned to the certification of whatever the film is. And then either side of that, you have between 10 to 15 minutes of just nondescript, awful adverts just for everyday products. Or like you said, one's trying to sell me the unlimited card, which I already have, or just one's about the theatre itself. So I think when you were describing them, I think you guys pretty much get exactly the same ones that we do over here. And by the time I think about it, I'm like, well, it's meant to start at 7. It's now 7:30 and the film is just thinking about starting. And it's ridiculous. I mean, we've always had adverts in the theatres. I mean, I always remember, even as a kid, I used to get annoyed, but only because there would be like two. Whereas now, the whole thing is you get in and you've got 20 minutes of adverts.
Yeah.
But the time, and annoyingly, the time I actually got there a little bit later to eschew the adverts, the film had started. So I'd missed the first few minutes. So I don't know what was going on there, but what film was it? It was Cobweb, I think it was. It's like, I think Cobwebs. I think I missed out some of those adverts. The film went to the 7:30. I'll get there about 7:45. Miss most of them. Got there 7:45. The film had bloody started. So I don't know what is with all that, but and even with the unlimited / secret screenings we have for the unlimited cards, and that even they are jammed full of trailers.
Adverts. Didn't used to be when they first did the mystery movie. It was like instant start, and then like the last couple have been 20 minutes of trailers. I'm like, come on, man,
bloody trailers. And that's what I love about not to toot the horn, but you know, we get invited when we go to these press screenings. You turn up, films, seats, doors open 6:30, film starts at 7:00. I actually know the film will start at 7:00 or 1 minute past if you're lucky. But film starts at 7:00, it comes straight in, it's done with. Now, that works because of the format as a press screening. You're there to watch make notes and get out. But, I find that almost more, that kind of regimented aspect, almost more enjoyable now, despite me loving seeing the trailers on the big screen. Like even like Disney Plus trailers I've seen in recent months for like Mando or whatever, or the new Ghostbusters one I saw on the big screen. All the horror trailers I like seeing. Quite enjoyed that kind of turn up at 7:00, film starts at 7:00, get out by 9:00, whatever. Quite enjoyed that, and I would like to see a bit more of that. But with what's going on with streaming, John, that's only going to push prices up, because cinemas are now becoming almost more, it's more of a niche thing almost. It's more of a exclusive thing, like it probably was back in the day, like flying was back in the day, where you could watch a film at home, or if you spend a bit more, you can come and watch it in a big screen with the best sound. It's not the only player in town anymore. The cost of digital projection bumped up tickets. The cost of studio films has bumped up tickets. I'd say the cost of living. I mean, inflation, you could argue with that, but inflation isn't making you say that bag of popcorn is worth $15. That's the studios.
Yeah, it's definitely not.
That's not the studios. That's the chains. But then the problem is, JB, the chains aren't making anywhere near enough money from the tickets, so they have to charge these stupid prices for the concessions. So who's to blame here? The studios pretty much mandate the cost of tickets because of their budgets, which means that the chains, the cinemas, have to then say, well, we hit a large popcorn or soda, that's $18. What? But that's because the only way they're making their money is through concessions pretty much now. So it's kind of like it's a catch-22 almost.
They've played around with a few different pricing points for like within a single theater. Like AMC tried to do like premier pricing for like the middle seats and stuff. But what they might need to try to do, because in the old days, and I'm sure it was the same for you, but like we had the big multiplex got the new movies. And then as those movies aged out, we had like dollar theaters where we could go and like pay a buck to see a movie that's been out for like 2 months or whatever. But those theaters have all but closed for the most part, like at least for me. Like there's almost no cheap theater. It's either you have the big multiplex or you have a little art house theater, but there's no like in between chain theater anymore anywhere near me. And maybe what the multiplexes need to do is like they have their big auditoriums, right? Like we have, I think theaters 1, 7, and 8 are like the massive theaters in my particular theater. Maybe those get the new movies and those have the premium pricing, like $13. But maybe once it hits theater number 4, the pricing goes down because it's a smaller theater. It's not as nice. The screen's got damage on it. Like, maybe they need to do that like dollar theater process, or this movie's been out for 2 months, so we're still showing it because there's nothing else here, but we're going to show it at a reduced price. And they do that like on Tuesday nights. I think they have like $5 movies at our theater, but maybe finding something like that to again, get people to show up. Like, maybe they won't come opening weekend, but they'll come in 3 weeks or 4 weeks when it's at theater number five and it's a dollar, you know, or whatever. Like, because again, it's still some money. You're still getting some of that money in versus nobody coming to see it at all and then waiting to see it on streaming, you know?
Yeah, and you're still getting that experience rather than, you know, no disrespect to Disney, Paramount, Max and all the rest of them, but you're still getting that big screen experience, even if it is a smaller theater where the sound might not be quite as incredible or the screen might be a little bit smaller. It's still bigger than watching it on your screen at home. I don't know about you as well over in the States, but in the UK, certainly some cinemas also have a surcharge based on where they are in the country. So if you go to a cinema in London, you're paying more. If you go to one in Manchester, you're paying more. Birmingham.
You mentioned the ticket prices like doubling. Like, my theater's ticket prices have been the same for a while. Like, they might have gone up a dollar or something, but like, especially with the unlimited pass, it's not even a thought for me of how much I'm spending on movies. Like, based on, I've saw 75 movies, paying $20 a month for the unlimited here, because that the unlimited varies on your location too. Because I only have one theater in my general vicinity, it's $20. I think if I live in Orlando, it's like $25 a month instead. But it, like, the Orlando tickets are like closer to $20 a ticket, where like my tickets are like $12, I think, if you're buying just a regular ticket. But with the unlimited, I'm paying $20 a month. I've seen 75 movies. So like it averages, I paid like $3 a movie. Now, I am the anomaly there. Most people who have unlimited are probably seeing one movie or two movies a month. I am seeing almost every movie because that is what my fixation has been. But next year, I am going to severely decrease my movie viewing because I'm starting the doctorate program. I will most likely just be seeing the weekly movie for the podcast, and maybe doing like one at home streaming of like something small for review purposes. But I'm still like, to me, as long as I'm seeing two movies, because that's two tickets is $22. So I'm saving $2 with unlimited. If I see four movies, then it's, you know, still cheaper than buying a ticket for each one. I like that that option. And there have been months where I've barely see anything, and then there are other months where I see everything, and it balances out. But
I use mine as much as possible.
Yeah, you're definitely a thing here. Like, the big, I know New York tickets are supposed to be outrageous. Like, per ticket right now,
I don't like that. But it's that with my unlimited ticket is £10 a month. What, $15 a month maybe? And that's because of the location. Even when I move in the next few months to a new area of the country, that then goes up to £12 a month, so $18 a month, whatever. And then if I also want to be able to use it in London, that then goes up to about £20 a month just for the privilege of being able to see a film in London, which I think it stinks. And I don't like that whatsoever. I just think it should be a flat charge. Doesn't matter where you live. You're still seeing it. If I see it in my current one or in the one 40 for 60 miles up the road, if you want to talk about demographics and stuff like that, the towns are the same size. Not one is no more prestigious than the other. Why are you charging me more? So there are so many reasons that they could do to change it. Less adverts before the films. If anything, more trailers, because, you know, how are you going to get people to come back to your theatre? Show them more trailers. Get the families who only go once or twice a year interested by showing them, you know, more, beckoning them with more things. Like, oh, let's play 7 trailers. And maybe that family who have just spent £150 coming to watch this film, maybe they'll think, oh, actually, I really like that one. Or one of the kids is like, oh, let's go and see that. Then they come back and see another one, rather than having the kids and the family get annoyed at having to watch half an hour's worth of adverts and then come to trailers. To me, more trailers, more chances of people seeing something they want and coming back. Also, it's a cinema. It's literally your place of business is to show film. So keep it in-house and show the films, i.e. the trailers. I mean, the concessions, I don't think there's much I can do about that until the studios cap their budgets in terms of the films. That's the only problem. They can do deals like they are, you know, 2 large drinks, 2 popcorns for this much, and hopefully it'll beckon people in. But people just bring their own stuff in now, and I think most of the time the staff are so, I don't know, you know, and I feel for them, alienated. They just kind of turn a blind eye, like, yeah, take it, what do I care? Take it in. Whereas I do remember when I used to work in a cinema or in a theatre, adjacent to a cinema, and sometimes I'd pull doubles shifts and go and work in there. It used to be very kind of strict, like you can't bring your own stuff in, and there was more than enough people on the doors. There was people checking you weren't on your phone. There were people checking that you know, the film, the ticket you bought is the film you're going to see. I remember the days when it was fully staffed because I was there, I was working in it, and it is a far cry now. So, I mean, they want these. It's almost, maybe my final thought is they've almost kind of tried to give you such a great experience in terms of when you walk in, as soon as you walk in the doors, you're hit by these neon lights. There's screens everywhere showing trailers. There's, you know, the concession stands are these big funky kiosks. Now you've got the digital booths where I am. You've got what's called addition of more escalators. Sounds stupid, but it's costs more to run than it does just to have stairs, and obviously you need that for disability and the lifts and stuff. There's more screens. The screens are bigger. The sounds are bigger. The speakers are bigger. The projections now, obviously all digital now, so the screens have to be bigger and have to be more capable of showing those films. There's so many things that the theatres have done to kind of say, like, this is when you come here, you're getting the ultimate experience, but kind of beating them in the backside because it hasn't been sustainable for them. And then unfortunately the pandemic hit, and that is what, you know, that economically that has been an absolute death knell for the theatres almost. And I do think we're lucky that lockdowns ended when they did, because otherwise I think we would have seen a lot more chains going under. And I wouldn't be surprised if we do at some point see, we've said this before, you know, Amazon Cinema or Disney Cinema, but Amazon or a studio owning a chain. And, you know, maybe they'll show other films, but they show their films. And that's how we're going to be doing the cinematic experience now. It's almost like streaming in a cinema. Amazon will show their films. I think one day we'll get to something like that. But there are many, many things they can do, aren't there, John, of which we've mentioned. And listen, we're not sitting here saying we're business experts and we can make you 50% more, but we probably could, to be fair. But these are things that we are patrons, we are theatre goers, we are people who have been there through it enough now, the good times and the bad, to see how things have changed. And there are things which are better. You know, you could argue that, yeah, you don't get a ticket, but if I book online, I can skip the queues and go straight in. You could argue that's much more convenient. Fine, and there are pros and cons, but I think the experience in itself has taken a huge hit, and there are so many quick wins that they can do, but unfortunately money talks, John, and I think that is the bane of it, is the money that they aren't making, that they have to recoup from somewhere. And the punters, we are the ones who either foot the bill or have our experience hampered because of it.
Yep, and that's why we decided to make that our appropriate concessions conversation.
Yes. So if you're listening, guys, cinemas, hire us. We can do a good job. We'll do a better job. There you go. I've challenged you now. We'll do a better job of getting bums in seats. But before we carry on and go on to that in an even more of a wild tangent on that, let's move on to our next segment where we run through the things that we've been checking out recently. It's called Media Consumption. The films, TV shows, video games, music, podcasts, music that aren't ours, that we use to pass time since the last episode. We'll tell you what it is. We'll run through them very quickly. And we also drop reviews on our TikTok and our Instagram. So if you want to hear thoughts about any of the particular films, well, we might just drop a little review on these socials for you. But JB, what have you been checking out since our last episode?
Well, as we said, we're just going to kind of list through these. I've been listening to podcasts, Big Picture Show, Rewatchables, and Blank Check. I've been doing a lot of back episodes of Rewatchables. It's a pretty good podcast. I'm a big fan of Sean Fennessy and Chris Ryan, so I try to listen to episodes that they are on.
Nice.
They're not regular hosts, but they are. Sean Fennessy's the host of Big Picture Show. Really become a huge fan. Movie-wise, a lot of stuff. I'm just going to hit this list real hard. Office Christmas Party, Mixed Nuts, 8 Crazy Nights, The Bishop's Wife, which is the Cary Grant film from the 40s, Silent Night, Bloody Night, which is not connected to Silent Night, Deadly Night, but I came across it as a result of that, and I was like, okay. Imagination's Migration, It's a Wonderful Life is a staple I have to rewatch every year, my favorite movie of all time. Scrooge, that's the musical with Albert Finney as Scrooge. Always watch A Christmas Story on Christmas Eve. Good Grief is a new movie that's out on Netflix today. I think that should have been a Christmas release. It starts at a Christmas party. I don't know what they were thinking, waiting a week. Mm-hmm. A Few Good Men, first time I've ever seen it. Hey, shock, great movie. Caught Anyone But You in theaters now. My review is up at BurkReviews.com for that one. Rebel Moon Part 1 on Netflix right now. I thought pretty watchable, if not super derivative, but nevertheless, too much slow motion. The Natural, the 1984 film. Yes, I'm starting to prep potentially for maybe a future astrology thing. Who knows the way that's going right now, but well, you know, it's on the books. Then as I mentioned, I went and saw The Boys in the Boat, the new George Clooney film, which the story is undeniable. The movie is badly made, but some good performances in it. But man, there's some directorial choices that I'm just like, what in the world? And structural choices where I'm like, why is there a framing device in this? It's so pointless. One of the most pointless framing devices I've ever seen. But still, undeniable story. It's very inspiring despite the many, many flaws. And that's what I've been watching, or consuming, as we should say. Matt, what have you been consuming?
A usual list and a half from JB. So like we say, check out the socials. You may or may not be seeing some reviews of those films on there. Me, I've been listening, watching Double Toasted. I've been enjoying their Bad Movie Roast for the last few days to unwind after a busy Christmas celebration. And in terms of films, The Muppets Christmas Carol, John. Yeah. Had to be done. Sat down and watched that. Always enjoy that. And as for newbies, I finally got around to watching Maestro. I watched Priscilla, and I sat through the utter crap that was Rebel Moon Part 1. Now, I'm not I did not like Rebel Moon, and it's nothing to do with the IP that it was originally based on. It's got good moments, and it's got some cool moments, and it's got some cool visuals. I just don't think it's very good.
I did watch it while doing other stuff, so that might have made, like, I might have only tuned into the good stuff.
And there are some good bits in there. Again, not to labor this, because I'm pretty sure we'll drop, again, to plug the TikTok shamelessly and the reels, I'm pretty sure one or both of us will probably do something for Rebel Moon. But there are good moments in it. There are. And there are some good scenes. Like, towards the end, it gets pretty good. And some of the visuals are very decent. But, you know, a Zack Snyder issue. I've got no issue with Zack Snyder as a person. He does use slow motion too much, but I just think the film itself isn't great. I don't care who directs it. It's just not a great film. So other than that, nothing else real, John, because I've been just busy pre-Christmas and now, but ahead of next week's episode, I have got some homework and I will be blasting through some films ready to make sure that next week is as good as it can be. And I don't want to jump too quickly to next week, JB, because this is the last show of the year, you know, and every week we've had to stay bloody awesome one way or another. And I am not going to let you leave 2023 without telling me how you've been staying bloody awesome this week.
Well, this week I would say Christmas lasagna.
Woo!
So we opted for a non-traditional Christmas dinner because it is just the four of us. We made lasagna, and my wife was going to make lasagna. She's made lasagna many times in her life. I have not, but she woke up very, very sick. And I'm like, you don't have to do this. I can totally, I cook most of the time. So I'm like, I got this. I can do it. I've made lasagna once. But the thing is, the previous time I made lasagna, I bought the noodles where you don't have to boil them. They were just like, you put them in and they say it bakes that way kind of thing. So this time I bought like the noodles you're supposed to boil them and all that. So I was a little more like, oh no, what if I mess this up? And the one thing I do have a problem with building lasagnas is like figuring out how much cheese, like, cause you only have so much cheese, right? Like you have the container of ricotta, and like, if you put too much on too early, then you don't have any for the top layers. And if you wait and you don't put enough on, then those top layers are like really heavy. And I was very concerned about portion control. I think I did a pretty good job. Made lasagna on Monday. Everyone was happy with it. Garlic bread and Caesar salad as the side. Then, but I bought lasagna, like making stuff, as if we were making for a lot of people. So I had extra stuff. So 2 days later, I decided to try lasagna rolls, which is you boil the lasagna noodles, and instead of layering it, you spread cheese on a individual noodle, you spread meat sauce on top of that cheese, and then you roll it and put it in a pan, and then put more cheese on top of all of these rolls and bake it. So I did that, and I think I like that more. Frankly, it's way more time consuming and very messy. Like when you're rolling, you're getting sauce and cheese all over your fingers. Like it's impossible not to. I did, thanks to a YouTube tip, I put them on a cookie sheet with parchment paper. So all of the cheese and stuff that squeezed out while I was rolling went onto the parchment paper, and I was able to scoop it back up and put it on the next one. So it was, you know, I'm glad I did my viewing before trying to roll up the lasagna. But lasagna rolls, I made two lasagnas this week in two different ways, both in the Christmas spirit. The funny thing was I messed up, and when I made the lasagna rolls on Wednesday, I thought my whole family would be of home for dinner, and I forgot my wife had a commitment that evening, and my kids are kids who they wake up at like 4. So when I'm like getting ready to eat dinner, they're like, we're getting our day started. And so I ate alone on Wednesday night. But it was good. There's a lot of leftovers. So, but I spent a lot of time rolling up lasagna for myself apparently. But what about you, sir? What have you done to stay bloody awesome this holiday week?
Well, nothing as exciting as rolling up lasagna for myself. That does sound, you know me, I love food. It's food. So that sounds bloody awesome to me. Mine is straight up, it's just Christmas. What else could it have been, my friend, other than Christmas? I mean, staying bloody awesome by doing Christmas. Well, just seeing family, eating too much, getting some great presents, gifting some admittedly great presents as well. And just having a nice time. And I know people say, oh, Christmas is losing its meaning or it's a prescribed fun time, but no, that's what New Year's Eve is. That's prescribed fun time. You have to pretend like you enjoy it. I couldn't give two damns. Christmas, I love it. Yeah, watching some Christmas films or Christmas television, or even just going for a walk and seeing all the lights up, or driving home for Christmas. Thank you, Chris Rea. And just seeing all the lights up. But yeah, just Christmas, man. Just having a great time with friends and family, eating too much, having a few Christmas beers or rum, more like, and just enjoying the spoils of the season and feeling a little sad. I've got to wait another year for it to be back again, but no, we've got you covered on the BAMP. Don't worry about that for another year. But Christmas, what else could it be? And for yours as well, Christmas is on you. Me, Christmas. We are Christmased out, I think, by now, John. But yeah, there was nothing else that we could have done to stay bloody awesome. But we do have one more treat for you. One more treat. Now, it isn't in 2023, but it is in the beginning of 2024. We know you've been waiting for this all year. And I know John has been sweating about this all year. Next week's episode is, I've got nothing to do, a drum roll, the BAMPies, the BAMPy Awards for 2024, which are our, you know, we have some fun. It's our annual awards celebrating the best out and slash maybe most disappointing of 2023. So we're looking back at the year that was and giving out our awards, similar to the Oscars in terms of the categories. It's also going to be available to watch as well, so you get to see us, which is always quite fun. So we like to film ourselves, and we don't know what the other person has chosen for any of the categories. So everything you hear on the night is real. So when John picks Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom as his third best film of the year, the shock in my voice will be real. So just remember that, guys. I hope I haven't spoiled your third favorite film of the year, John, being Aquaman 2.
I don't think so. I think I kept that under wraps pretty well.
Okay, good. Well, if it isn't that, then I've just spoiled the fact that it isn't. So, yes, next week, guys, it is the BAMPies. It's our little award show. So if you're tuning in expecting to hear a concessions or media consumption, I wouldn't, because they won't be. It will just be straight up BAMPies. We always enjoy doing that. And it's a fun way to start the year off. So that's what we're doing next week. Thank you for listening to this episode where we covered Aquaman 2. Let us know what you thought about the film by following us on social media. Find us on Twitter or X at BAMP_podcast, BAMP_podcast. John, where are we on Instagram?
We're at Bloody Awesome Movie Pod.
And as we've mentioned a few times on the episode already, but I'm going to mention again, we are also on TikTok, where we drop reviews, mini reviews of the films that we mention in media consumption mainly. We'll also do the main episode, but if you want to know what we thought about Rebel Moon or some of the other films, you're going to find them on TikTok. Just search Bloody Awesome Movie Pod on there. Please follow us and support. We enjoy putting them out, so you know, give us more reason to do so. And if you're on Facebook, Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast, where to find us. check out the tomato meter for every film we talk about, because more likely than not, you'll see the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast has contributed to it, because we are an RT approved podcast. So check that out. Let's see where we're going to end up with Aquaman. It's going to be interesting to see whether we go fresh or rotten. We'll discuss that shortly. But if you want to find me online, you can do. Just go to whatiwatchtonight.co.uk and search What I Watch Tonight across all of the socials, including Letterboxd. JB, where are you?
I'm at burkereviews.com and at burkereviews on all the social media platforms.
Yes, sir. And if you like what we're doing, and we certainly hope you do, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and review on your podcast provider of choice, because those stars genuinely help the show get out to a wider audience. And we love what we do, and we'd love more people to love what we do as well. So with that, for 2023, as always, stay bloody awesome.
And keep watching movies.
Blood, 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 bloody, 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 blood, blood, bloody.
Awesome.